Welcome to Shollycast, the podcast all about Lolly and Shota, including Not Safe for Work. Shollycast is hosted by me, Hydro, and Dr. X. Together, we make up Team CyberHex. We're the developers of Insexual Awakening 1 and 2, an adult visual novel game where you play as a Shota protagonist and get into all sorts of wholesome, naughty fun with friends and family. I primarily work on the writing and planning for our games, and Dr. X works on the programming, artwork, and additional writing. If you'd like to play Insexual Awakening 1 or 2, you can download them at our official Barag at barag.net/cyberhex. You can also check out our continued development progress of Insexual Awakening 2 at our Subscribestar, which is subscribestar.adult/cyberhex. Welcome back, everybody, to Shollycast. Once again, I'm Hydro and with Dr. X. And today's guest, we are joined by Shimu. How are you, Shimu?
I'm doing all right.
Now, how did you get into Lolly / Shota? Like, what was like your first experience with it, or what made you really enjoy it?
So I can't remember how I got into it. I know what got me into it. My first hentai manga was a Lolly hentai manga, H manga called Slow Stop. And I remember in one of the chapters, I was like, oh, hey, the girl's the same age as me. This is neat. And yeah, I just kind of, you know, kind of went from there. I ended up finding more Lolly H manga. And it was just like, this is cool. Like, some of the girls are like my age. This is neat. I can relate to that.
I mean, when I think about it, I mean, I think the first Shota, like straight Shota manga that I really enjoyed was the Kama Sutra by Pandora's Box. And, you know, I wasn't honestly that far off from the Shotas themselves. So I can totally understand that. Like, you know, yeah. In some ways you enjoy stuff that you can almost self-insert yourself into.
That's what I've always liked in that.
I think a lot of people do that with fictional content, and Dr. X and I have talked about that a lot before.
In fact, we're probably going to have an episode talking about that, because there's tons of people who like self-insert as a Lolly or self-insert as a Shota.
So I don't know if you've seen there's a study done in Japan on this, and it's something like, it's like 50-something% of like male lolicons self-insert as the Lolly.
Oh, really?
Wow.
That's interesting.
It's a really interesting thing, right? Like, and a lot of the artists like see themselves as the Lolly, not as the ugly bastard or whatever, what have you.
I love how the ugly bastard's always the go-to for the male in the Lolly comics.
No, it's not, and I hate it. It's my least favorite thing. But like, yeah, no, a lot of them, you know, you would assume... A lot of people assume that like the author would self-insert as the male, but no, they self-insert as the Lolly more often than not.
Now, do you know if that is that tied to anything related to like gender dysphoria, or is it something else?
It's something else. Because like if you ask them, they're like, no, I'm male. But you know, because I think it's because, you know, Lollies are by design supposed to just embody pure mullet cuteness, right? That's what they're supposed to embody. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of people, male or female, like just they self-insert as that, because it's just like, who doesn't want to be, you know, the pinnacle of cute? But like, part of what makes a Lolly is that it's fictional. You can't get that style of cute in real life. It doesn't work, because it's a style of cute that only exists in fiction.
Yeah, that's right. And probably in addition to just the cuteness, probably like the, you know, the spirit of youth as well attracts people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a big aspect of it too. I think a good example of it is like Onimai. Onimai is kind of that fantasy. Oh, I get to become cute girl, do my life over, make everything better. and enjoy it. You know, I get to be cute, I get to wear cute clothes, etc. But it's not necessarily, you know, you have some people who are like, yeah, this is like trans rep for me. But for other people, it's just like, I'm a guy, but I'd love that.
I like trying different things.
Well, no, just the idea of getting turned into a lolly. Like, a lot of guys are just like, yeah, I'm all for getting turned into a lolly. But you ask them if they actually want to be a girl, they'll be like, no.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. Hydra, yeah. would you like to be turned into a lolly?
Compared to a Shota, I mean, I'd rather be a Shota, because then I feel like I could, I'd be okay with turning into a Shota, but lolly, probably not, even though I do love lollies. This is what makes me think, though. Okay, so in Japan, you said it's around like 52% of male lollicons picture themselves as the lolly in a doujin. I wonder if it's the same in the West. I wonder if that proportion is the same. Like, if you're
I don't know how openly people would admit to it, but there's a lot of guys, like even in my own community, who will be like, yeah, I wish I was the lolly.
Interesting.
But they're like, I'm a guy, but I would still like to be the lolly. I know a lot of people, a lot of guys like that who've always been like that. And it's like, yeah.
Do you think for, of course, this is kind of a different dynamic, but I wonder if female Shotokan fans picture themselves as the Shota. That's an interesting one.
I think some of them do. I mean, it depends on the Shota content, because if we're talking like Shota X MILF, that's actually targeted at guys
who
want to be the Shota in that scenario.
It's contextual.
There's some girls that see themselves as the Onesan, etc. It does nothing for me at all on either side. But I also know people who just like, yeah, I know some girls who can self-insert as the Shota, actually, and that I think about it. I know some girls who can.
Yeah, and especially if they, I think probably especially if like in addition to the straight Shota, they also do like BLs, you know, yaoi stuff. So yeah. I feel like in that scenario, it might be easier for the girl to self-insert as the Shota.
Oh yeah, there's definitely girls that self-insert not just as the Shota, or like, it's not even necessarily a specific character. Like, there are people who self-insert as both. They'll see themselves as both, like both males in a yaoi situation as a female.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because a lot of the time it's not necessarily about the gender of the character. It's about how the character is presented, personality, traits, etc. So like, I can self-insert as some like trap characters, right? Because they're just really, really cute, like trap Shota, right? And they get treated like a lolly and they look like a lolly. And it's just like, they act like a lolly, and it's like, I mean, that's basically the same thing, right? So like, when I'm reading stuff, I'll just be like, I identify with this character, even if they're not necessarily a girl. They look like one, so it's good enough. And I think there's a lot of that type of stuff that can happen, like, in fiction, because it's fiction, right? And that's what fiction allows, and it doesn't necessarily reflect on how we feel about things IRL.
Yeah, especially since none of us actually look like anime characters.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of my favorite things to, you know, when I get aunties at me about lolly stuff, I'm just like, well, you know, I'm a lesbian and I like reading yaoi. So if you're saying that I want to do things to lollies, what does that say about me as someone who is female and a lesbian reading yaoi? Like,
oh, you read yaoi?
I mean, I read like, you know, Chap Shota getting railed by guys, kind of nice. It's kind of good sometimes. Very
nice. I agree.
But it's like, obviously this is a scenario that like physically incapable of mirroring IRL, but I think it's cool in fiction, right?
Yeah. And I feel like you even get like straight guys who like the femboy Shota getting railed.
Well, yeah, so the otoko no ko genre was actually targeted at a male audience. It was not targeted at a female audience.
Mm.
Yeah, so the, you know, where the term trap was originally applied was for those otoko no ko manga, which a lot of the running theme was like oh, you thought I was a girl. Haha, I'm not, which is why it was really translated that way. But yeah, that is, those were actually targeted at guys who enjoyed those kind of scenarios and those stories about girls, about guys that look like girls.
Yep, exactly. You can use them. Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of how that genre was.
I think it, one of the things that Dr. X and I talk about, and this is this actually kind of ties to what we're talking about, like what the different audiences, what appeals to them. One of the things we always think about is if you're, for example, if you're a male Lolicon fan, or you know, you're into the yaoi crap stuff, do you like seeing angles where you can see the trap shota or the lolly, or do you like seeing it when from the perspective of the person who's railing the trap shota or the lolly? Like, in other words, showing the, like, if it's straight lolly, for example, I know there's definitely female fans who insert as the lolly. They want to see more angles. Yes.
I kind of zone out the male because I'm not into guys. So it's just kind of like, it's kind of just the lolly experience is kind of what, how I like mentally like look at it.
I think the orientation definitely plays into it as well. Mm-hmm. So then if you had like a Yuri lolly doujin,
sometimes insert as both. Sometimes I'll be like, I want to be both girls in this.
So it would be the same, similar to the two shotas, like in a yaoi, where they interchange.
Well, I mean, that's not even exclusive to shota. Like some like bara yaoi type stuff, right? Like, or the bishonen type stuff. Like girls will self insert as one or both for that as well, and guys will as well. I mean, you can just solve that way because it just works. But yeah, I definitely self insert as a lolly like that.
Is there any particular personality type that you're into in like a doujin for either a shota or a lolly? Like what's your favorite like personality type, or do you have multiple personality types you like?
I have one particular that's really a big favorite of mine. So my favorite scenario as a whole, and I will always talk about this, is like the little sister teaching the big, or the big sister teaching the little sister, right?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that one.
You know, little sister is like first time, and not like Milfi One Son type, but like, you know, but like still like cute, youthful, like One Chan, just like helping the little sister with their first time, you know, teaching them what to do. I love that dynamic. But also, I really love the little sister who is like all cute and innocent, and like, you know, everyone that looks at her is like, oh, she's just so innocent and pure. But when it's like the target of her affection or whatever, she's like just full on Masugaki. But then, you know, when you call her on it, she's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you gotta do?
I know what you're talking about.
I love that. I love that. That's probably my favorite personality type. It's what I relate to, but I'm innocent. I would never.
Yes.
Those scenarios are a lot of fun. Because see, I'm really into straight shows my like favorite, so to speak, but I love both lolly and shota. But I do love incorporating incest into usually any kind of shota or lolly. Like it can never go wrong with me. Like I'll never be like, oh no, I don't want incest in my or is Sengoku Complex now interchanges it in their tags. They have incest and then they have consanguinity. I still can't pronounce it. Have you seen that new tag? No,
I don't use it.
Well, it's weird because you'll put in incest and then it will have that tag on there on top of it. It's weird. But yeah, like I do like the inexperienced youthful shota slash lolly with like an one-san or of course I love the MILF stuff and the older characters, more experienced characters too. All those scenarios are great. I love them.
Shimu, you said that you do enjoy the straight lolly stuff because of the lolly experience.
Yeah, like I like the dynamic. Not necessarily, like, I'll just zone out that there's a guy there and just kind of like I can enjoy the whole dynamic, and cute lollies being cute is always nice too, you know? But yeah, it's just like, just kind of like, I don't know how to explain it, but like, just kind of zone out that it's a guy.
Yeah. That reminds me of like some gay guys will watch like porn of like a man fucking a woman or something, right? And you know, even though they're not into women, they still enjoy it because of the man in the scene. So that reminds me of that.
Yeah, and like honestly, like size difference and stuff is really nice. That's really nice. I enjoy that. It's just like, man, if it was a futa, it'd be so much better. But you know, here we are. For me, the youthfulness and like the childlike nature of a lot of it is like an important aspect of lolly for me, because that's what I relate to. So like lolly baba I can enjoy as a trope, like as a character type to like watch, but like I can't self-insert as a like lolly baba type character, or like I can't like relate to one.
I think probably most people can't relate to that, like you're like a very small cute lolly, but you have like the personality and knowledge of like a grandma.
Yeah, or even just like an older lady, or like just someone more mature, right? And a lot of people do like that a lot. They like the idea of someone that's like small and it can kind of manhandle, but it's like very mature, and it's just like, I can't relate to it. I'm not mature enough to relate to this.
you don't want to be big brain lolly like, with 1,000 IQ.
Well, see, that's different from being mature.
That's true. That's true.
Now, Hydra, what do you think of the lolly baba character?
So the lolly baba character in terms of
it's a mature, like a grandma personality, very mature and probably refined, but they have a body of a lolly.
I mean. If I had to choose between just like an actual like just regular lolly that's just immature, and so I'd probably prefer that over the lolly baba, but I'm not gonna complain if like there's an anime or doujin that has a lolly baba, because then what you can do is a similar sort of scenario that Shima was talking about, where you could have a lolly baba doing the initiation on a more immature lolly. So you kind of have the world of a lolly that's looks like a lolly physically, but it has all the maturity and all the experience, versus a lolly who is more immature. I feel like I would actually enjoy that scenario if somebody made a doujin like that.
Can't think of any doujin or H manga like that, but also just it's not a type I'm attracted to either. I like more mature than me, but not like super mature, I guess, or not like super older, if that makes sense.
So like in a jury lolly scenario with where one character's older, do you gravitate towards it's like the kind of like the late teens one-san?
Yeah, like the but like, you know, especially if they're like just like petite and stuff, I can like so relate to them as well. Just be like, I'm gonna be both. But yeah, like late teens, early like 20s type mentality is like really nice.
That makes sense.
Super mature lolly. She's just like, ooh, what's this?
Now, for people who haven't known of you yet, what kind of work do you do?
I do a lot. I do a lot.
Well, we should probably address the very cute small lolly in the room.
Yeah,
your VTuber avatar.
Where?
There, Lolly. So I know that just from my research that you have a Twitch, correct? And you have different platforms that you stream on, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm a VTuber. I stream on Twitch. And I try to post stuff on YouTube periodically. My Twitch content is every Saturday I do DJ streams where I DJ live.
Oh yeah, that's right. I wanted to ask you about that because I like making music too, so pretty exciting.
Yeah, so I do my own DJing and VJing during my DJ streams, and then the other streams just kind of vary depending upon how I'm feeling. I'll play games, I'll do just chatting, I'll do puzzles sometimes, where like chat can join in on putting together puzzles, and we'll just spend hours doing puzzles. It's really fun, it's really comfy. Sometimes I'll do a mix content where it's like I'll play Minecraft, but then in the corner I'll have like a window for YouTube, and we'll just like kind of chill, watch some YouTube videos while playing Minecraft and building or something, you know.
Very, very, very nice. So
I play a lot of different stuff.
Yes, that's super comfy sounding.
Outside of that, I write music. I'm working on an album this year as part of my subathon goal.
Ooh, nice.
So that's about half done. So a lot of what I've been posting on YouTube has been like different tracks as I've finished them. My most recent one was a remix of Ribbon Cage by my friend Fallen Shadow. She's actually using it for her Be Right Back screen now. So that was pretty neat. I did not expect her to use it for that.
Oh, nice. You're making more progress than me on the music. I've been trying to make music for years, but that's awesome. I mean, that's a great subathon goal to have. And I mean, how many lollies are also DJs and music producers on Twitch? I mean, very few. If any, you're probably the only one.
Yep. And then outside of that, I do voice acting. I'm learning 3D work with Blender, and I'm also learning to do 2D drawing as well.
So you're branching out. You're going multifaceted, a lot like what Dr. X and I do. Same thing. Yeah, I feel like creative people, you got to do that. I feel like creative people, they naturally want to branch out and do other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I do lolly voice acting work for different artists.
Very nice.
Like 3D Mo, Doron Tabi, So and a lot of other artists I've done voice work for. For 3D stuff, I mostly work with a friend of mine named Mesu. He does like Genshin, Nahida, and Klee 3D stuff. And he also does Shimo with them a lot. So I've been helping with he's been teaching me stuff, and I've been helping do like the renders and the animations and the voice work for the animations as well.
That's awesome, because I've been wanting to get into 3D Blender stuff as well. It's been treating you well so far?
Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in the rendering and the animation aspect more so than the actual modeling, but...
Oh yeah, I totally understand.
I've been doing what I can with that. The 2D drawing, I've had a couple friends who've been helping teach me, but I've not had enough time for it.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I would like.
Yeah.
So your avatar, how did you design that? What was the concept of coming up with your model that you use?
It's just me.
Like it's literally you. Nice. I feel like that actually is a common thing to base a base model on your own likeness in the VTuber space.
Yeah. I get lost a lot. It turns out anime finally became real. Thanks to Shibo. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm a real anime girl.
I won't complain.
Right? There's a complain about.
It's only to praise.
But yeah, so aside from all of that, I also help translate for loli artists on occasion.
Oh, so you translate from Japanese to English, you mean?
Yeah, so there's a few artists I've helped. I've helped them with like translating their doujinshi, or I've helped translate like their Fantia fan box descriptions, etc. I keep busy.
So you then how much Japanese do you actually know? Like do you actually know the Japanese language fairly well, or how did you learn it?
I learned it through magic. I don't know how I learned it. Honestly,
like, osmosis.
That's actually what I've told people. I'm like, I've just learned it through like osmosis, right?
I mean, that happens. That definitely happens.
Yeah, like, so it started out with me just chatting with Japanese artist friends who, like, didn't speak English. And so I, like, used a dictionary and, like, Google Translate. And then over time, I realized I didn't need those anymore. And now I'm at this weird point where it's like, I can speak it really well with some subjects and not with others. Like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I did a collab with a Japanese VTuber. And her whole thing is like teaching Japanese to English VTubers. And so every stream she does is like on a specific subject. But we ended up in a call for like an hour trying to figure out what to do it on, because she's just like, your level of Japanese is like really high. I don't know what to do the video on. And she's like, is there anything you need help with? And I was like, you know, like, so we ended up doing one on like business emails, and we have plans to actually do some more, because a lot of the aspects that I need help with are actually kind of useful even for some Japanese speakers, I feel like, because it's just not stuff you would like normally learn. So with our business emails, we focused on like how to send business emails to like artists, which is very different, because like if you look for business email templates online for Japanese business emails, nothing will cover art. Like, and there's like a whole process for it. Like, there's a lot of info you need to include, or you'll just be completely ignored. And it's something you kind of learn as you go, even speaking Japanese, because it's just like, there is no real good resource on how to do it.
Like, there's no guidelines.
Mm-mm.
Interesting.
Until you start doing it. Like, sometimes an artist will have their guidelines, but not all artists follow the same guidelines for what they need included. So.
Right. Yeah.
We're planning... we're still figuring out what to do, but it's going to be Japanese versus English streamer terms.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. I feel like those kinds of, Japanese VTubers teaching their English audience. Yep, I feel like that's really popular. I feel like that gets a lot of attention. So I think that's great that you're doing that. You're collabing with that.
Yeah, and it's really fun, because like even when we were hanging out in that call, like. And I mentioned that, like, she mentioned a phrase that I hadn't heard before. I'm going to forget what the term is off. But it's basically the Japanese word for lurker. And it was funny because she didn't know what lurker meant. And so when she was explaining this Japanese term to me, I was like, oh, that is the Japanese term for lurkers. And we both she just kind of had this moment of like, that's what people have been saying to me. I was like, yeah.
And so you both had a moment of realization.
Yeah. So she's got about like 30 words written down and is about halfway.
Nice.
Of just like really unique, like streamer terms for, and those are Japanese terms, right? And then I'm going to, you know, try to pair them up with the English using, you know, my knowledge.
Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's so like I'm at a point where I can do really interesting like things with Japanese speakers who do speak English but don't know a lot of slang and stuff, because like we kind of fill in each other's knowledge gaps, because I know enough Japanese to understand what's being talked about, but I don't know how to pair them together all the time, and it's the same on the reverse side. So yeah, I'm in a weird spot with it.
It reminds me, I was actually just watching a video earlier today about this. This Japanese woman was talking about when she came to the United States, how she was learning how Americans have applied Japanese words to their own slang. And it was really funny because she mentioned the word hentai, and like, she was just like, I had no idea that Americans use hentai to describe anime for adults.
Yeah, because that's not what's used in Japanese.
Then she mentioned, the one that she mentioned was hibachi. And she was just like, but hibachi means like I guess hibachi means like a pot, or a hot pot or something like that. I need to remember the video. But she's just like, oh, you're talking about, because she went out with her friends and they're just like, oh, we're just gonna go to the hibachi grill. And she's just like, wait, you're gonna grill giant pots and eat them? And then they got to the restaurant and they said, here it is, the hibachi. And it's the flat grill that they cook on, which in Japan is the teppanyaki, which I probably am not pronouncing
it right. Teppanyaki.
But yeah, it was just really, really amusing. So that kind of stuff is fun. I think
brazier is what you're thinking of.
Maybe that's, yes, I think you're right. I think that's exactly what it is. And it's just amusing to see how it gets like changed over depending on like the country you go to.
Yeah, I remember the name for it. Oromu. R-O-M. Oromu is the Oromu-sen is the Japanese word for lurker, and it's literally like read only member.
It almost kind of sounds like room, you know, like ROOM in English, like that you're stuck in the that you're in your room.
Well, lurking. It sounds more like Roam.
Oh yes, that's Oromu. True. That makes more sense too.
It means read only member.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
it's so funny.
But that's so. This is basically like a guest or a viewer who just watches, but they don't like try to interact at all.
Yeah, lurker.
Yeah. Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, so like she had like English speakers in her chat who would be like, "Yeah, I'm just lurking," and she didn't really know what that meant. I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that's what that is."
Oh, now she knows. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot of times like that. And honestly, it's one of the things, it actually frustrates me a bit. Like, speaking of the hentai thing, because, you know, you have people who apply the word doujin to mean hentai manga as though they're interchangeable.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate it. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. It's one of my biggest pet peeves, and I can't stand it. Because for multiple reasons. One, it's wrong, right? It's wrong. Completely wrong.
You're incorrect. Lolly says you're incorrect.
Yeah, but also it makes conversations really confusing, even in English for me. When people misuse it, because they'll be like, oh yeah, I love this doujin. And then they'll mention it, and I'm like, well, Comic Clothes is not a doujin. It's a commercial magazine. It's not a doujin. And I'll have people try to fight me on it sometimes and be like, no. Doujin is not a hentai manga. It's not. And for me, it's important because a lot of the music stuff I'm into is doujin music. Right?
Oh, interesting. So there's actually, so there's doujin music? Explain
that. So doujin is a descriptor. It doesn't refer to something specific. It's not a physical thing.
Right. So, because doujin essentially is that kind of like the equivalent of like indie? Let someone knows you're like saying like indie music.
Indie is also a thing in Japan, but essentially what doujin is, doujin translate is the direct translation is same person. It's basically people who produce their own content and release it and sell it at doujin events.
So it's like self-produced. That's kind of probably the closest way to describe it.
The easiest way to describe it to people as I do is that it is a non-commercial endeavor. It is something you do without profit in mind. And it's a very specific way of putting it because it's also why it's legal. A lot of doujin content is original. But parody work basically only exists because they are non-commercial endeavors. Because in Japan, there's no copyright exceptions. Basically, companies will set the rules for fan art and fan works, and you basically abide by that. And so the only reason doujinshi are covered and are safe is because it's a non-commercial thing. Something like 80% of doujin circles don't make a profit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I didn't know that.
And we're talking out of like, so at typical Comic Con, you have like 35,000 circles and 80% aren't even going to break even. Maybe the top 10% of that is actually making a profit. And those are the really big circles, often doing original content.
So then, is the goal then of creating doujin content, is the goal of it just to get, more publicity to then eventually make income? Is it just for fun?
Like, income isn't on the mind with it. And if it is, you'll fail, because that's not what it's about. It's done for fun. Like, people want to like get their books out because, again, like it's selling them at these events. So when you go to these events, your fans come up to you and buy it straight from you, right? And so part of the appeal and why these artists keep doing it is like, oh, I gotta make more stuff for my fans to buy because they'll come up and be like, hey, are you gonna do more of this? Are you gonna do more of this, right? And so it's that kind of environment, like seeing other circle artists that like you become friends with by having booths next to each other, etc. It's like, it's that kind of environment. It's similar to like the artist alley, you know, at an anime convention. If you make a profit, if you break even, that's fun. But like, that's, you know, a cherry on top. But the actual, you know, purpose is that interaction. And just being able to be like, there's not enough like time in this anime for my favorite character, so I'm going to draw art of her because she deserves it, and I'm going to sell it. You know, I'm going to show the world like what I've done, right? And that way other people who love her can also come and buy it, and we can connect over a shared love for this character. Or just, you know, I have these ideas in my head and I want to put them out there.
I totally get that because I've been to artist alleys. And you can really see the love and passion that creators put into their fan works.
And that's what it is. I mean, Toho, right? Toho. Mm-hmm. All the Toho games are doujin releases. And in fact, until the last like 5 or 6 years, Zoon had a rule that like no commercial works were allowed for Toho. Like, they had to remain doujin. And he had like pretty loose rules on what you could do as far as doujin stuff goes, which is why there's so much Toho content, because, you know, a lot of that's actually really interesting. A lot of what's considered canon lore for characters actually came from some of these doujin fan circles who like canonized these interactions with the characters that they had canon, and they became so popular that Zune even wrote some of them into the games themselves because it kind of just took on a life of its own.
I can definitely see that happening. I think that actually happened. What I forget, there was some other. I can't remember what it was, but yes, I can totally believe that happening, where it gets so popular that they just go.
Yeah, and just like
you've got, you know, that actually did happen.
You've got these good, like very like basic storylines. I say basic, but like, you know, they tell a story, but it's open ended enough that you can create ideas off of it really easily of how you imagine these characters interact outside of the game setting, right? And you've got all this music from the games that is free to arrange as much as you want, right? And so it just opened the floodgates for people who are like, I don't necessarily have original ideas for my own right now, but I have really good ideas with these characters or with this music and how I could arrange it to sound really cool, etc., right? And so, like, yeah, you have like these circles who've been around for 20 years now, who've just been pumping out all this Toho content, and it's all really cool and creative spins on this one guy who made a bunch of games in the 90s and keeps doing it.
That's amazing. I really admire that. Yeah, I feel like people who make like fan works of stuff, they don't get as much respect as they deserve.
Not necessarily in the West, but in Japan, there's a fair bit of respect for it. And I mean, a lot of them get famous. What is it? Tsukihime, right? The original Tsukihime release was actually a doujin game.
Oh, really? Wow.
And then Type Moon after Tsukihime became an actual company, and they stopped being a doujin circle. Another example would be Seventh Expansion, the circle that created Higurashi. Those were all doujin games that then proceeded to get adapted into an anime.
Yeah, that just like exploded in popularity.
Yeah, and that goes for. There's actually a lot of creators who maintain professional commercial works while also doing doujin, which is why I separate it from normal indie content, and I don't just say it's fan content, because Kamiya Yu, the creator of No Game No Life, while he's working on the light novels and publishing them, he released like doujin art books with all his concept sketches and ideas for the series, and even put out a doujin of Shiro and Sora fucking, because you know that's what he does.
now that I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's like snuck into the back of one of his Idolmaster doujin shi. But yeah, you know, he's actively publishing the light novel, but also doing doujin content at the same time. So that's not what you would think of with like indie or, you know, fan versus pro, because there's a huge overlap between the two. Like, and like there are some commercial booths at Comic-Con as well. Like some of the companies will set up booths and they'll have scouts that'll go around looking for new talent.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes me think of One with his One Punch Man webcomic, and kind of like he was pretty much just doing that for fun, if I recall correctly. And
there's a lot like that. Like Monster Girl Daily Life started out as an R18 for a coma, so they were actually fucking in it. Mon Musume.
I love Monster Musume, by the way. I watched the whole anime of that.
Yeah, and it was based off these R18 for comas that he posted online of the malt fucking. Then a whole series was made out of it that was not R18, but there's a lot of stuff like that. For example, the character designer for Ore no Imoto and Eromanga Sensei, he under an alias Han Somen P is a Vocaloid trance producer. And he, under Tab Graphics, he would release art books with like Miku art and different things. That was like his doujin activity. And then, you know, under a different name, he had like commercial trance releases on international labels.
I wonder if that's a common, is that a pretty common thing for them to do different aliases depending on if they're releasing Dojin stuff versus commercial stuff?
It can be, yeah. And sometimes it just depends what kind of content. Like, it's common to have different aliases for different types of content. His commercial trance release alias is Hiroyuki Oda. But he also released Dojin content under that name. But Han Somen P was just for Vocaloid, right? And so all his non-Vocaloid stuff was under Hiroyuki.
Yeah, I feel like that's not as common in the West, having multiple aliases for different things that you work on.
No.
But it kind of makes sense, though, to it makes sense kind of doing it that way, where, like, you know, if you want to release music and create your own music, you might want to have your own separate name for that. And then if you want to do artwork or you want to make video games, you then have another separate name for that. So I can totally see how that makes sense.
It depends what you're doing. But I know music artists who have 20 aliases.
Oh my gosh. But for every single genre that they're making or something?
No, it's not even necessarily a genre. Like, some of them are like one-off aliases because they put together concept albums, right? They put they did a theme for this album and they're like, I want to do it under this name to fit with the theme of the album and everything.
Oh my God. Wow. They're like, really committing to it.
Make a whole complete thing for it. And you do see that in the West as well. One of my favorite like metal artists is they're called Before the Dawn.
I think they're going to Wolfheart now.
It was actually the project for one guy. And when he was working on one of their albums, he actually wrote enough content for like two or three albums. And he kind of parsed it down to where he's like, yeah, this is the music that I think fits with like the theme I have going with Before the Dawn. And he made a new alias for all the other stuff because he's like, yeah, this doesn't really fit with the main stuff. So I'm going to do a different like band basically for this one. So you'll see that a lot with artists where they're just like, I don't feel like this name I'm using in this, it doesn't feel right. So I'm going to use a different name for it.
It's interesting. It's almost like that they're, yeah, like I can understand that. Like, you want to be, if you want to be thematic to a particular project, I can totally see like, no, this name doesn't quite, you know, this alias doesn't quite fit like with this project, what the vibe I'm going for. So I'm come up with something else. Like, I can totally see that. I'm with them on wanting to maintain like consistency on like a theme or a feeling of a project.
Yeah, you get a lot of that. And then you have the ones who kind of do it out of obligation.
Oh, yeah.
The best example is Kamiranjaku Sanpei, who does some of the most absurd H manga I've ever seen. Like, he does Loli, Shota, and Futa stuff. Sometimes all three at once. Really fun stuff. Like, he has this one, Shota Yaoi one, and one of the chapters in it is about ejaculation-powered dinosaur robots fighting off Gundams.
Wow, that sounds very unique. I gotta read that one.
It's hilarious, but what's even funnier is when you consider the fact that his real name is Toshihiro Ono, and he did the Dengeki Pikachu manga, The Electric Tales of Pikachu.
Oh my, wow, that's quite a range.
Yeah, but you know, he has an alias for his R18 work and for Pokemon, because you don't really want to have those two. Like, you don't want to search for a Pokemon artist and get porn.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, are you sure about that? I mean, we're really into that.
Hey, listen. There's plenty of art of me getting fucked by Pokemon. That's...
I'm gonna have to look that up now. I'm gonna have to peruse through the artwork and find that
There's
stuff.
There's a lot of it.
It's just research.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, there's some artists who will separate it just for depending on who they're working for slash with. Some companies are not going to want to work with someone who does porn, and other people just won't care.
And I wonder if there are some companies where they specifically only want the adults, the R18 stuff. Although I would imagine that's probably less common.
Yeah, I think that's more like a given if you're working with an R18 company that the artist probably draws R18.
Yeah. Actually, it'd be kind of funny if like an artist joined an R18 company and like they, you know, would make all these like amazing, like non R18 stories, but then sprinkle in R18 so that it just, just barely follows it. That'd be really funny. I'm sure that's happened before.
Yeah. I mean, like it's crazy because like some artists, where was I going with that? I got totally off. I had a thought and it's gone.
it went in one cat ear and out the other.
Yeah, pretty much. What was I gonna say? Yeah, like some artists, some artists like use aliases to be anonymous.
Oh yeah. I think there is quite a few, at least from what I've heard. I don't know how true this is, but I know that there is definitely like cases or examples of female artists that go under like an alias that's kind of either ambiguous or sounds more. Doesn't sound like a female name to conceal.
You get the opposite as well. There is males who produce under female names.
Oh yeah, that makes sense too.
There is females that also produce under male names, and so it makes it hard because like Ikino Minato, who is known for really really messed up loli manga, right? I don't know if you're familiar with the name. Their circle is Noreneko no Tama.
I'm not sure because see, like I don't. I usually like am more like I get like focused in more on the specific manga that I read rather than the circle or something like that.
That's fair.
So I'd have to think about it. I'd have to think about the context. If you maybe said what one of the messed up stories was, I might know. But usually with loli stuff, I try to avoid the like really more edgy, disturbing stuff or messed up stuff.
So it's a female name. So as far as I know, she's female. There are a lot of female loli con artists, a significant amount, actually. But if the name is accurate, then she's a female artist that does some of the most extreme loli H manga that I'm aware of.
Really, that's interesting. Like,
yeah,
I honestly, I'm a little curious. Like, can you give like a little peek into what she makes of the content?
Yeah, I'm curious now.
One of her series has the tags rape, slave, snuff, amputee.
Wow.
Yeah, I figured it was gonna venture into the snuff type things.
Yeah. No, like dark skin loli gets turned into a slave and torn apart, basically. That's a lot of her content. A lot of her content is like very extreme. Mm-hmm. All I ever remember her for.
All right. You're not normally drawn to that stuff?
No, not quite that extreme. Her art's really cute, but like, yeah, like one of her works is like insect snuff.
Oh yeah, that's a hard no for me.
Yeah, it's like no, I don't like insects in my company. No, thank you.
Only insects, not insects.
Exactly. Please don't mistake the two. That's a big mistake. Especially not worms.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I got enough of that from Heaven's Feel to last a lifetime.
Yeah. I feel like out of all the insects that they could have going into orifices, worms are kind of one of the least appealing.
None of them are appealing.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
I mean, generally insects are certainly weird. I haven't really seen very many that are appealing.
Yeah, but of course, you know, if someone is listening to this and they like that stuff, more power to you.
Yeah, I mean, I know girls who draw like grow their self-insert characters, so it's not too surprising to me.
No one needs to feel like insecure about anything. You know, like what you like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't judge, but it is a thing that like people do largely assume. It's like, oh, they're all male creators, and it's like, actually, a lot of them aren't.
You know, it makes me one of the things that we like to do is we ask just because it made me think about this just now. Is there any Lolly character that you wish more people knew about, like from either a story or a game or mm-hmm. anything like that that you can think of?
I don't know if I would say I don't know. I don't know if I could name any that I wish more people knew about offhand.
Here's a more interesting one. You might be able to answer this. What are some of your favorite Lolly characters?
That's like from easy one. Nahida from Genshin and Shiro from No Game No Life. I relate to those two a lot.
I had an inkling that you were going to mention a Genshin Impact character.
What gave you that idea?
I do remember Klee being mentioned earlier.
Well, I mean, I like Klee, but it's not Nahida.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
I am the Nahida voice actor. I said it as a joke once, but it's not so much of a joke anymore.
So you voice that character a lot in NFN works?
Yeah, like the work I did for like Doran Tabby and 3D Mo was all voicing Nahida.
Well, hey, it's a character you like, so you might as well do it, right?
So. No, see, it's better than that because I get commissioned to voice the characters for them.
oh, there you go.
But, you know, be so down bad for your wife, but like you get asked to be the voice for her. It's just like, let's go.
Yeah, shut up and take my money. Yeah. Do this.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, do you take commissions like rips from like different people or just specific people?
I'm very selective about it after that experience I had. Mm-hmm. For the most part, I mostly just do stuff I'm interested in. I kind of hesitate to do. I tend to stick to commissions from artists. Not from like fans. Oh, yeah.
I totally get that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I always want to have like artist permission.
Makes sense.
Or work alongside the artist. Because that just gives better results as a whole.
Mm.
But plus, in a way, you're kind of networking too mm-hmm. in that aspect.
Yeah, and I have various deals in place with different artists. So like some pay me, others they do free art or discounted commissions for me in exchange.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's like a win-win for both of us, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So if I want to commission them, but they're like $300 to commission, but I voice their stuff for them. So like they do like half price commissions for me.
Oh, like, damn. You know, that's a good deal.
Yeah, right? Or they like include like, you know, they'll do a sketch for me and include an extra character instead of just doing a one character sketch for free, because, you know, I do the voicing. Like, yeah, there's a lot of scenarios, like a lot of different things I've had set up that, like, well, like, unless you're like a really big artist, like, you don't generally have the funds to fund a lot of voice acting work, because it is expensive to commission.
And not only that, and I'm sure you know this, you know, Lolly voice actors and Shota voice actors for Not Safe for Work stuff is very difficult to come across. At least,
especially in the Western space.
In the Western space, I was just about to say, yeah, it's like so difficult to find them. Yeah,
and that's why I got hit with a lot. And I'm glad people like the work I do. I got into it because no one else would do it for a friend of mine. Like, they just couldn't get anyone to voice the Lolly characters. So I was just like, you know what, screw it, I'll just do it. And that's how I got into it. Not really out of any passion per se for voice acting, but as much as like
necessity or necessity, but
passion for the art in general. Just like,
yeah.
I think it's dumb that every dumb big titty girl can get a voice actress, but, you know, the cute small character that I care about, no one's gonna do it. I'm just like, this dumb. it's so dumb, especially when it's like, you know, the voice actors will work, well, like, they'll like voice the other character that's not the Lolly, but they're still with the Lolly, and it's like, what's the difference? My God. But also, I don't like most voice acting work, so I approach it differently.
Yeah, like I know that with Dr. X and myself, whenever we've talked back and forth about wanting to get, you know, potential voices for like future IA games or things like that, one of the things we realized was, okay, if we somehow do get a Lolly voice actor or a Shota voice actor, then we also have to find a more MILFy or One-san voice actor. But here's the thing, that they have to be okay with the Lolly and the Shota in the game. And sometimes, and a lot of times they're not. So it's like,
yeah,
you might be able to secure the Lolly and the Shota. And then you're just like, wait a minute, I can't find MILFy voices. So it's like, and the other challenge too is there is not, I've found anyway, it's very difficult to find like a central hub or somewhere where you can kind of network with voice actors too.
I left the one I was in. They didn't have an issue with Lolly per se, but like everyone in there won't touch Lolly content, and I just felt like out of place.
Yeah,
like it was all the big voice actresses and voice actors that you'd see in like all the animations around. I'm just like, I just felt so out of place. Like the person who ran the server like invited me, and they're like, "Yeah, I love your Lolly voice acting stuff." So like I knew like they didn't have an issue with it, but it felt really weird to be around it, and especially around people being like really lewd a lot of the time and talking about lewd things, where I'm just like, I'm not a lewd person despite my interests in hentai. despite my interest in like Lolly and stuff, like I'm generally not a lewd person despite how it may come across. And like, especially when it comes to just general talk about like, especially when it comes to like IRL lewd things, like, my brain just shuts off. Like it is all so foreign to me, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't have anything to contribute to this. Like, I just feel so out of place.
I can understand that, because like I've definitely been like in servers or like in chats with people where all they do is talk about lewd things and nothing else. And you know, talking about lewd things is fine. You can, if you want to do that all the time, that's great. But you know, when you don't necessarily want to do that, or you want to talk about something else more in depth, and then you find out, oh wait a minute, that nobody really wants to do that, and then you don't really know what you can talk about because they're always
I'd hear them talking about like how they do voice acting and different things, and talking about like, oh yeah, you know, I just throw a toy in while I'm doing it, or like I'm just like I just fake it. I just try to, you know, mimic the sounds I would make while doing that stuff without actually doing that stuff. that's kind of how I approached it. And, you know, like, for me, it's just like, I also feel out of place because I don't like the work like most of them do. I don't like how, kind of gross a lot of voice acting comes across. I don't know how to word it better, but it's like over exaggerated, very like lewd.
Oh, I know what you're. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Kind of like with normal porn, and I don't like it. I don't like it. And like, I see some do that for lollies, and I'm like, no, lollies should be cute. They should sound cute and soft, and like, they shouldn't sound like gross.
The hyperventilating stuff.
Yeah. Well, like there's a way. Just like a lot of like Japanese voice actors, you know, they go very soft on the lollies, and then just like a lot of heavy breathing, but not like, they don't like do like dirty talk and stuff. That's just weird. Like, I don't know how to explain it, because like there's like a way to do it where it's still cutesy and it works, but then like, I don't know, when I watch it, like, you know, an anime, like animation, I don't want it to sound like watching an IRL porno video, you know.
Right.
No, I get what you're saying, because it's like, yeah, I definitely know what you're talking about, because that can sometimes kind of ruin it if the sound is a little too over the top and a little too, it kind of like almost breaks the fantasy of like the Lolly character, you know, being cute and stuff like that, and you're just like, yeah, that doesn't quite fit. But yeah,
and sometimes they just go overboard on the sound effect.
Oh yeah.
Where the sound effects honestly are what kill it half the time for me, because they're just like,
they mix it too loud or something.
It's too loud, they're just gross.
Yeah, the gross like much. Sloshing sounds and wet sounds.
Well, because isn't that what it normally sounds like? I mean, I just gotta be super loud and sloshy.
No, you're ruining it with that. Like, yeah. No. But yeah, so like, I'm very opinionated about it, but, you know, I know there's a lot of people who like how I do it because I don't do it that way. And so I stick to doing it that way because, like, I don't know, I try to make, like, what I do fit, like, the character. And I feel like a lot of people just go in, they do a lot of moaning and stuff, regardless of how the character is.
Oh, yes. See, that would definitely, if I was like directing someone who I commissioned to do voice acting, that would bother me. Like if they didn't get into the character or the specifications that I wanted, I'd be like, well, I'd want them to be more focused on trying to get a specific vibe or a specific personality in the character, for sure. I can understand that.
I'll see some and I'm just like, that doesn't like fit the vibe of that character like at all. And it's like one thing if it's an OC, but when it's like an established character, right? Like Nahida, for example, like she should sound cute. She should sound like inexperienced.
Yes, exactly. Established characters are especially important to capture their personality from where they're from. That would bug me big time. So I'm with you on that.
Mm-hmm. So like some of it with like even the lewd talk, it's like the actual word choice like matters.
Oh yeah, that's true. All yes. Right.
That, so you have like right. a cute innocent lolly, you don't want her to get too raunchy because it doesn't really fit the character.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, because how is she going to know all these, like, all these different terms and all these different things? Like, no, that's not how it works. It doesn't make sense for a character. So, yeah, because I do a lot of the writing for IA and IA2, and, you know, I'm always trying to be very aware of making sure that a character doesn't say things that wouldn't make sense if they didn't know about something, whether it's lewd or not lewd. Right, because
and that's how it should
be. Yeah, that's exactly it. Now, if later on in the story, after they have experienced things and done things, maybe they might start mm-hmm. knowing certain words. But yeah, like that's a big deal for me for sure. I focus on that a lot.
And sometimes it's not just specific words, but it's also just like how it's delivered.
Yes.
Like a lolly will say things in a way that like a MILF won't.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Especially a more innocent lolly. Like they can use lewd words, but they're not going to deliver it in like as lewd of a way.
Yep. And I do the same thing. I like make sure.
That's the kind of stuff I keep in mind when I'm doing it, because I'm just like, I feel like it's like I don't feel like this really fits with them, so I'm gonna change it up.
Nice, and I'm taking it probably when you do that they actually, you know, the person who you might be doing well, whatever the work for, do they usually appreciate that when you like try to get more accurate to how the character should be? Or
I think so. One of the artists I did a Yao Yao one for an artist, and they were like, "Oh my god, you sound just like Yao Yao," which made me really happy to hear, because I was like, "That's kind of what I was going for."
Nice. That's good. I'm glad that they appreciated it, because, you know, it'd be one thing if like you did it and then they're just like, no, I mean, I want the character to sound like this, and you're just like, no, but that's nothing like their character. So I'm glad that they appreciated it.
I'll even do like the sound effects myself for them. Like I'll like add them myself. And I spend way too much time on it. Spend way too much time on sound effects, because I'm really particular about it, because I think a lot just like slap them on there and call it a day, but I'm just like, I like time them to be like, this doesn't make sense, like, right, like,
yep,
I'll time it, yep, with my voicing.
Yeah, no, that I can definitely, well, because I think the problem is and I notice this a lot just with voice stuff too, is, you know, the mixing of the sounds also isn't, in addition to the timing, the mixing also isn't great. It's like all of a sudden you get like a really loud slap sound or something, and it's like,
yeah,
it's
no, like, I keep the mix pretty quiet compared to the vocals. I make sure the vocals are on top,
which is good. Yeah, I think that's the better way to do it for sure, because you want to be able to hear the character.
I actually record and mix it down in Audition.
Oh, nice. Yep. Audition's great. I do like
Adobe. A lot of people use like DaVinci Resolve and stuff. They'll like do it in their video editor. But like, I tried and I'm like, I hate this. I actually just hate this, because it is not an audio editor.
Yeah, that's right.
So it doesn't
give
me the control I want with it. But yeah, so like Audition does let you import a single video file that you can actually do a mix session to.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I'll just do a ton of recording takes in that, splice them how I want, add the effect, and time it to the video there. And then I just bounce the audio and throw it in Resolve and bounce it as a video that way. And I've just found that's just like a much better process for getting the audio exactly how I want it.
Yeah, because it's specifically made for that, and now it's got like all these plus you've got all the different audio tools to as well, which are probably a lot more expansive than DaVinci Resolve.
Oh, very much so. I actually had to like mess with pitching my vocals in one of the ones I did for Doram Tabi, because I voiced Nahida Klee and Sayu in one all at once.
Oh wow.
And I had to mess with it because, it was sounding so, like, the Sayu and Nahida ones were sounding so similar, they were actually phase-canceling each other.
For people who don't know what phase-canceling is, it's basically when, like, the audio is so similar in the audio spectrum that they null, cancel each other out and you don't hear anything, or you like get like a weird almost like wavy yes.
It gets robotic and such. Yeah. So I had to re-record the section slightly different, and then I think I pitched it like up or I pitched it down to like fix it. To get it sounding just slightly different enough without adding any roboticness to it. The whole thing.
nice. Well, yeah. we're really glad you joined us for this podcast. We had a great time talking with you about all this different stuff, and I hope you enjoyed your time here chatting with
it's
us.
It's been fun chatting.
Yes, thank you for being on.
Now, we always put the links to all the different different places where people can find you. But just let the listeners know again where they can find you or where they can check you out.
You can find me on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, etc. as Shimo Hisai, Shimo Hisai. Pretty much the same app, like everywhere.
Nice, very cool. Well, once again, thanks again for joining us, and I hope your VTubing continues to go great, along with your DJing and your Blender work and your voice work and all the other myriad of things that you do. Because Dr. X and myself, I mean, we work on multiple projects and multiple things, and so we certainly understand that when you have to do, I got to keep yourself busy because you got to try to either establish multiple streams of income, or you got to be able to just try to build up your following, and definitely excited to see how much further you go.
Yeah, I just always keep a lot of projects going at once. For better, for worse.
Yeah, well, it keeps, it keeps you active, and plus you're learning new things, and then you get more experience, and you just get better and better at it. I mean, that's what, Dr. X and I, when we started working together, now I think it's like 6 years ago on IA, the first in Sexual Awakening. I mean, I know my writing has improved a lot from there. And then, I learned like a bit more about music production stuff and, just organizing, things like that. So it's definitely great.